We're holding on page Chaf Hey in Psachim, a couple of lines from the end of Ois Mem Tes, so I should say from the end of the first Ois Mem Tes, because apparently there are two. About the middle of the page. Here, the first one actually is supposed to be Mem Ches. I don't know, in my copy it's both of them are labeled Mem Tes. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so fine. So the end of Ois Mem Ches properly then. We're in the middle of talking a number of pieces of advice that Rav gave to his Talmud Rav Kahan. So we said he told him better to turn over a carcass, better to turn over carcasses, in other words, to be involved with working with them rather than with words, because words can lead a person to nivel peh and all kinds of problems. He told him even do menial labor involving stripping off the skin out of an orphan nevela, as long as you earn money from it, as long as you can make a parnasa from it, and even in public, and don't say, look, I'm a Talmud Chacham, it's beneath my dignity. Which by the way, we didn't mention yesterday. Eitz Yosef brings for this Gemara is also in Bava Basra. The Rashbam mentions over there on Bava Basra. Now we do have. It is true that we learned in Masechta Shabbos that a Talmid Chacham always has to be careful that his clothes are neat and clean and there shouldn't be any stains on them. Otherwise, he's degrading the Torah. But here, where he's doing it for Parnasa in order to earn money, then that's not considered a gnai. Okay, so now he continues. East Salkas Agra, if you Igra, if even if you go up to the roof, Sherusach, you should always have your food with you. So in other words, even whenever you're taking a trip, always make sure you have food with you. Even if it's such a short trip, you're just going up to the roof, make sure you have something with you to eat. Then he continues another piece of advice. Mea kori b'masa b'zuza, even if there are 100 pumpkins selling in town for one zuz, in other words, they're very cheap. Tusi knafach levi, they should still be under the corners of your garment. In other words, so Rashi understands that it means basically this, it's a continuation of the previous one. You should always make sure to have a food supply with you, and even if, for example, it's so cheap to buy, you could buy 100 of them for one zuz. Nevertheless, always make sure you have some in stock with you at all times, rather than relying on, I'll just go to the store and buy some. There are several other explanations about this mea kori b'masa. Among them are that it means that it means not just not necessarily always to carry the food with you, but to always make sure that you have so that you go and buy them. In other words, go and keep some don't keep some of your money under wraps. Don't spend all of it on them. And then the Aruch gives an explanation that it means when you come across such a bargain, such a metzia, fine, go ahead and take advantage of it by all means, but keep it under wraps so other people don't get jealous of you, and that could lead to an ayin hara. Okay, more pieces of advice from Rav. Amalei Rav le Rav also some advice for life. Loi tishti sama, don't drink medicines. In other words, don't get in the habit of drinking them. So Rashi explains, because then you're gonna get addicted to them, and then you're gonna have a hard time keeping up your keep. It's gonna end up being expensive, and you're not gonna be able to keep it up. So better don't do it. And then he also adds, and then the Rashbam adds another point as well, which is earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara mentions that all medicines always have side effects. So any kind of medicinal drink or anything, you take it, it's good for one thing, but it's not so good for another part. It's often pointed out in Sfarim. That's one of the many differences between the Eibishter's healing and a human being's. As good as doctors are, there's always side effects, whereas the Eibishter heals without side effects. But anyway, the point is, so therefore that's another reason not to take medicines if you can help it, because it's not necessarily going to be good for some other part of you. Again, there's other points in it as well. One, the Ben Yehoyada makes a point that it means also, in other words, instead of if a person is sick, he may have to take medicine, but better in the first place take proactive measures to keep your health up, so you don't need the medicines in the first place. Next, he tells him, "V'loy tishva nigra, don't jump over." Tishva literally means jump. Nigra means steps. So it means, in other words, don't take big jumping steps. The Gemara mentions elsewhere in Brachas, in particular, that it takes away some of a person's eyesight. And again, there are other explanations. Nigra in the Gemara sometimes also means a canal. So it means don't jump over a canal. And it can mean the same thing, because the jumping weakens a person. Don't do it unnecessarily. It could also be because of the danger that he might fall in, for example. Veloita akakocha, don't have a tooth pulled. Because so Rashi says, in other words, eventually it'll heal. So don't be so quick to have it pulled. There's actually a letter. There's a letter from the Rebbe to somebody printed in the back of one of the volumes of Likud Sichas, where this guy had something with his tooth, and the doctors were telling him it had to be extracted, and he didn't want to. Based on this Gemara, the Rebbe tells him, listen, you know, Nishtanu Ativim, and what it says in the Gemara over here, as far as medicinal advice, is not necessarily applicable nowadays. You got to listen to what your doctors tell you. The fact is, they mention in the footnotes of the Orth School Gemara from there's a sefer by a Frum doctor in Berlin in the years before World War II. He wrote a sefer first in German, later it was translated into English, about biblical and Talmudic medicine. So he goes through the various medicinal things in the Gemara and analyzes some of them, and he points out over there that extracting teeth back then was not a lot of fun. Nowadays, at least they give you anesthetics, and they use specific dentist's tools. Back then, they basically used a pliers, like the kind you find in a blacksmith shop or something. So that might be a good reason why Rav is telling his son Chia, if you can help it, don't get a tooth extracted, which wouldn't necessarily apply nowadays. Anyway. Also, don't provoke a snake or a goy, because the Gemara is going to bring further on we'll have on other days that in particular they may grow up and take revenge against the person. So therefore, so be careful not to get on their bad side in the first place. So now the Gemara continues. The Inyak over here is jumping around a little bit because some of the things that we have here, these advice from the Chachamim, is given in a different order in the Gemara. Why Inyak has them in a different order? I don't know. Anyway, Arba Dvarim Tzivur Rabbeinu HaKadosh Hasbonav. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, gave four instructions to his children. The first one, Al Todur B'Shchansiv. Don't live in the city of Shchansiv, which is the name of a city in Babel. Mishum d'inshi leitzoni ninhu, because there are people who are big leitzonim. They're very much into leitzonus. Or mashchilach b'leitzonusa, they're going to draw you into their leitzonus. Now, Ben Yehoyada points out, are we suspecting Rebbe's children, such great people, that they would be involved in Litzonus? So he says, no, what it means is these people of Shchansiv, part of their Litzonus was that they would come up with ridiculous questions in Halacha in order to make the Torah look silly. You know, you have something similar, the Medrash says about Korach, that when he's gathering his following over there, he gives them a whole fictional scenario of an almana where one thing after another, every single thing she wants to do with her money or with her possessions, then Aaron is right there demanding his cut of it. So these people of Shchansiv are doing this kind of thing as well, and therefore, so they're going to come to you with Shilas, but really it's going to be in order to make a mockery of the Torah, and you're going to, if nothing else, you're going to be wasting time on their shtusim instead of on proper learning. An interesting point, actually, is Shchansiv is a city in Babel. Why is Rebbe Bechlal thinking that his children might conceivably settle in Shchansiv, that he might even be giving them such instructions? I saw something who suggests maybe it wasn't supposed to be Rabbeinu HaKadosh, maybe it's supposed to be Rava. Could be, like the original Girsa was Rebbe, and then somebody expanded it to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and Rebbe might easily be confused with Rava. They're only one letter different, so maybe it was Rava telling his children. We do find that Rava lived in Mechuzah, but Mechuzah, we find in various places in Gemara, is not far from Shchansiv, so therefore Rava would have been familiar with the character of the people over there. Anyway, but I'll take with that said, though, there is a Gemara in Kiddushin where Rebbe has quite an intimate knowledge of things that are going on in Babel in terms of what's going on in various kahilas and things. He was, after all, the Nasi, so maybe still Rebbe figured his children might end up over there. Anyway, the next thing he tells them, Va'al teshev al mitas aramis. Don't sit on the bed of an aramis, of a goiter. Now, what does that mean? Some say it means that he's telling them don't go to bed without saying Krishna, because that would be acting like a goiter. Ben Yehoyada actually adds an interesting point. He says, you know, mi'ikra din, you're allowed to say Shema in any language. The fact is, if you don't know Ivri, you're allowed to say Shema in English or Russian or whatever language you know. However, that's one thing when you're doing Shema B'tzibur, you can daven B'tzibur, then the Eibishter directly accepts the tefillah, so you don't need Malachim to bring them to him. And the Malachim, as we know, don't understand or don't care for Aramaic. But if you're saying Kriya Shema privately at home on your Kriya Shema Shalamita, maybe better you should be making an effort to say it in Lashon Kodesh, because otherwise the Malachim are not going to bother with it and bring it to the Eibishter. So therefore, Mitas Aramis can mean you may be saying Kriya Shema, but you're saying it in Aramaic or some other Goyish language rather than Lashon Kodesh, and that's not the best thing. So that's one explanation. The Ikka D'Amr de Tinsav Giyota. Some say that Rebbe is telling his children, don't marry a Giyoris. Now, why not? Rashbam says, because the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that a ger, even up to 10 generations from when his ancestor became a ger, is still very sensitive to slights to goyim. We find, for example, by Yichad Yisroi, where one meaning is he was very upset over what happened to the Mitzrayim. He should have good reason to be happy that they got what they deserved. But Furt, you know, he still has a certain affinity to them because he himself came from that background. And the Gemara says up to 10 dirtis, it's like that. So what's going to happen? In other words, you marry a Giyuris. It's not always easy for a husband to always be on good terms with his wife. Sometimes he may act in a way to her that's painful to her. And being a Giyuris, it's going to be much. She's going to take it much more personally. So therefore, so that would be why Rashbam says why not? Obviously, you know, other things being equal, you know, Yeshua married a Giyuris, Boaz married a Giyuris. So it's obviously not a hard. There's many, many, many great people in Jewish history who married Giyuris. So it's obviously not a hard and fast rule. It's, you know, yeah. Anyway. The Ikka D'Amri Mita Aramis Mamash, some say that Rebbe's instruction means the actual bed of a goita. And the reason is, Mushum Maisa did a papa before, and the reason is based on something that happened with a papa. Both Rashi and the Rashbam give the story over here. There was a goita who owed him money, and he was coming every so often to demand payment of the debt. So one time she told him, come sit on the bed. So one day she killed her child and put him under the bed. And then when her papa came in to demand the debt, she says, come sit down and I'll bring you the money. And then she starts shrieking and screaming, you killed my baby. And sure enough, there's a baby underneath there, and her papa was forced to run away. So therefore, be careful to not sit on her bed in the first place. Now, the Gemara in Brachas tells the story very similarly, but there it says actually that a papa did not end up falling for her trick. He says to her, first pick up the bed, and she picked it up, and there was the dead baby, and therefore from that came this piece of advice. So Rebbe, by the way, is generations before the papa, but obviously, you know, he's saying that such a thing could happen. So how does it fit where here Rashi and the Rashbam are both saying, what? So in other words, the version that's told in the Gemara in Brachas is when she told him, come sit down on the bed, he says, first pick it up. Let me see what's underneath it. And she picks him up. She picks it up. And there is the dead baby. So he realized what's going on over here, that she's trying to frame him and make a blood libel against him. Whereas the version that Rashi and Rashbam are saying over here is that Rapapa did fall for her trick. He did sit down on the bed, and then she successfully did make a blood libel against him, and he was forced to run away. So how do you reconcile them? There's a couple of different answers. One of them, the Chidah says that maybe in fact what's in the Gemara in Brachas over there is not an original part of the Gemara, but was added later. Maybe the Gemara only says there, Mishum Maisa did a papa. So maybe somebody added the story over there and got that particular detail wrong. And here Rashi and Rashbam are telling us the correct version. And there's different other explanations as well. Anyways, that would be another meaning of Rebbe's instruction. Don't sit on a Mitas Aramis. It could mean an actual goita's bed, because you could have a situation like that. Next, there's other advice that Rebbe is giving his children. Don't try to evade the tolls now or taxes. Now there are lawful tax collectors then who are actually collecting on behalf of the government, or when you cross a bridge or whatever, who are collecting a toll. But you would also have, the Gemara mentions in many places, there were muhsin, there were people who would illegally collect taxes more than they're supposed to. They're considered gazlonim and halacha, they're posoleidus, a whole bunch of other things. Many times actually what it was is the government wouldn't, it wasn't like nowadays where you fill out your own individual return. Back then, the idea was often that a particular town has to pay X amount of taxes, or a particular region or whatever. And the king would appoint somebody who often would buy this, he'd buy this right from the king to collect taxes from this area. So he might tell him, you have to collect $1 million from this area. So now the guy would figure, good, I have an easy way to enrich myself. I'll collect 2 million from the people, and I'll give the king his million, and then I have a million for myself. So that's what the Gemara usually mentions in such in various places, that such people are ganovim, and you are allowed to evade and try to avoid paying them in various ways. It mentions in many places in Shas. Nevertheless, Rebbe is telling his children, as a practical matter, don't try to evade them, because they may find you, they may get to you, and then they're going to take away all your money. Where like this, you could have gotten away with a little bit, with paying them a little bit extra, and now like this, they end up using it as an excuse to take away everything you have. And another one, he says, don't stand in front of an ox when it's coming from the meadow, because the satan dances between its horns, which doesn't literally mean the satan is dancing. But Rashbam says it means that the ox is feeling a little crazy at that time, and therefore he's more likely to attack. The Tonid of Oshia, as in fact of Oshia, teaches in a braisa, you have to stay away at least 50 amma. Specifically, we're talking about a black ox during the month of Nisan. So during the month of Nisan in particular, grass is starting to grow again. After a whole winter where the ox didn't have any grass to feed on, and the stami is cooped up indoors a lot, now he's able to get around, and there's lots of grass growing. So he feels, in English, you have an expression, he feels his oats, which is, so literally, in other words, he's feeling very good about himself, and therefore he's apt to go a little crazy. Marsha points out another a symbolism in it, though, that now mazel shur is primarily the mazel of ear. Here we're talking about b'yomin nisim. So first of all, it can mean Tkufas Nisan. Many times Tkufas Nisan runs into Iyar on our calendar, because Tkufas Nisan runs from early April until early May, and many times that comes out, many times part or a significant part of that comes out during Iyar. But also he says that what happened in Nisan, the Mazel Tzleh, and what happened in Nisan, Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the whole Mazel Tzleh was the whole power of it was weakened and destroyed at that point. The Jewish people are davka taking a sheep for the Korban Pesach and then sacrificing it. It was one of the national avodah zarah of Mitzrayim, and with that, they're weakening the power of Tzleh. So now, therefore, the Shur sort of feels very good about himself. Look at that. My time is going to come early now that my rival, the Tleh, is gone, and now it's my turn already. So therefore, like, he starts feeling a little crazy and a little too full of himself already in Nisan. In fact, Marsha says there's a symbolism in this in the Chet Egel. Why are we mentioning Davka, a black ox? Because that's exactly what happened. They jumped the gun and made an eagle, which is a baby cow after all, and their faces turned black in embarrassment from it. So that's why the Gemara is mentioning over here, Shur Shachar B'yomin Nisan, meaning, and the Satan dances between his horns, as we find the Satan got involved over there with the Chet Egel, and things developed from there. So this statement of the Gemara, besides talking and as a practical matter about to stay away from this kind of ox this time of year, it's also hinting at what led to the Chet Egel. Anyway, the Tonid of Oshia, so of Oshia teaches a braisa. Machikin mishur tam chamishim amma. You have to stay at least 50 amma away from an ox that's a tam. So even though it's not known to have gored yet, you still have to stay at least 50 amma away from him. Or mishur amud kim loy enav. And if it's a mud already, it's already gored three times, then you have to stay away from it as far as you can see. We had this in Brachas, by the way. The Gemara mentioned over there that for that reason, if you see this ox, and as the Gemara is saying, we're talking about again a black ox during Nisan, then that's a valid reason to interrupt in the middle of Shemana Esrei and talk or do whatever it is to save yourself from it, because it's a clear and present danger. Unlike, for example, where it says in Brachas over there after the Nachash Korach Al HaKevei, but this black ox during Nisan is much more of an immediate danger than that. And the Gemara continues, Tony Rab Hoshia Mashum Rab Meir, Resh Torah Dikula, even if the ox's head is in the feed bag, so like you would think it's busy eating, it's not focused on you, nevertheless, Sakla Igra, go up onto the roof for Shodi Dagami Tutach and throw away the ladder from underneath you so it can't climb the ladder. Now, oxen don't literally climb ladders, but in other words, it's a figure of speech. It's an exaggerated way of saying, make sure to stay as far as possible away. Even if you think the ox is distracted with something else, you never know, he can all of a sudden become vicious. current events also, you know, you think that these guys are quiet and doing their own things, and all of a sudden they come bursting through. So continuing on the topic of oxen and other animals, how to control them, Omar Rava or Rab, Nizha the Torah Hain Hain. The Nizha for an ox is the words Hain Hain. Now Rashi explains it means it's a lachash. It means that you use it as a spell against a shur that it shouldn't gore you. Then you say Hain Hain. The Rashbam brings that, but then he also says, more likely, he says, what it means is, it's the kind of thing, like if you're yelling at an ox, you're trying to get an ox to get up and do work, then you yell at it, hain, hain. And, you know, like in English to a horse, you say, giddy up. So the same thing, the appropriate term for an ox would be hain, hain. Nizha da'arya, when it comes to a lion, again, a lachash, or the way to get it to do something for you is zaza. Nizha da'gamla, for a camel, is da'da. Nizha de Arba, if it's a ship that's stuck and it won't move, then the words are Hilmi Haya Hilo Vihilokila. The Mesha Chochma actually has a very interesting explanation on this, an Avodadik explanation. He says, you know, a person can have two kinds of Yetzirah. You have a behemish Yetzirah, where a person is attracted to Tivus of the world, and then you have a more intellectual kind of Yetzirah. So the behemish kind, you see all the ones the Gemara is saying over here for animals are just repeating the same syllable a couple of times. So therefore, the same thing. You want to distract your behemish yetzahara. You don't need arguments or anything against it. You just need, you find some word, almost like you have a mantra or something that you repeat to yourself over and over and then get rid of it that way. Whereas when it comes to the more intellectual type of the yetzahara, like a boat, then it's not enough. Then you need actual arguments to talk yourself out of it. That would be like with the boat over here, where you're not just repeating the same word twice. You're actually saying a whole bunch of different words, as in that's how you have to deal with that kind of yetzahara. Ben Yehoyada also talks about that a meaning of it is also each of these represents a different kind of person that you might encounter and like how you deal with them. I don't remember what he says about the ox, but for example, he says that the lion represents the Talmud Chacham. So therefore, do everything exactly as he says. This, whatever this is that he says, follow it. And the same thing he explains with each of the other ones. The gamla, he says, represents a goyim chesed. So also da, this, everything he's doing is a very good thing. And then similarly with all the other ones. Omer Abaya, more health advice. Omer Abaya, a skin of an animal, the dog or a fish, the koischam, and each of these Gemara is going to describe the details. The koischam and a cup of hot water. Or beitzim and eggs, the kinim levonim and white lice, which pashtus means lice eggs, kulan koshen l'davar acher. All of them are bad for a person. They can lead him to developing davar acher, meaning tzaras. Maybe not the classical kind of tzaras that a person is tamei from, but some kind of similar skin disease. So what does it mean with each one of them? Or what does it mean? A skin of an animal means mandagonia mashcha detzala. When a person sleeps on a skin that's in the middle of being processed by a tanner and hasn't been finished yet. So it's like a raw skin. So then that's bad for it. It's bad for him, and it can lead him to develop tzaras. Maybe because of the chemicals they use for tanning it. Who knows? Dog, what kind of fish are we talking about is bad for him? Specifically, shibuta b'yeminisen, specifically shibuta, which is a type of fish. The Gemara elsewhere describes it as the goat of the sea. So evidently, it's some kind of fish that somehow resembles a goat, which at particular nisen time is bad for you. Kois, what do we mean by a cup? It means shiure kosa, the leftovers of a drink that are in a cup, I guess, that somebody else drank from. Shir kosa de harsana, rather the leftover of a kosa de harsana. So we learned the other day about kosa de harsana was their equivalent sort of gefilte fish. It was a fish fried in their own fat together with some flour. So you have the leftover of it that's left in the cup. When a person eats it, then it's bad for his health. The next one, chamin, when we say hot water, we don't just mean stam hot. Chamimi de chamimi meshadu ilave, meaning when he pours very, very hot water on his skin. the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Deis, for example, that when a person is bathing, he should bathe, the Rambam describes, he should bathe his head in water that's hotter than he would use for the rest of his body, because that'll kill lice. But for the rest of his body, he should use normally hot water, not too hot, so his skin doesn't get burnt or blistered from it. So here we're talking about where a person uses too hot water on his body, then it can cause him to develop tzaras. Beitzim, what about the eggs? Is mand midrach haklifim. If a person steps on eggshells, so apparently somehow that can cause him to develop tzaras. Kinim levonim, what do we mean by white lice? It means mand machaber levushay. If a person washes his clothes, v'lenotir le'tmanyo yomi, and he doesn't wait 8 days before putting on those clothes, v'hodir lovishla, and then he wears the clothes, bayon hanach kinim, then lice develop in the clothing, v'koshin le'davar achar. And so not only is he dealing with lice, but also it can cause him to develop davar achar tzaras. Ben Yoyada points out, I mean, nowadays nobody's nizer in that, because we're talking about when you wash the clothes, there were lice on them. So now what happens is, so in other words, Rashi explains the lice, or at least their eggs, are still able to live for a certain amount of time. So when a person puts them on, within 8 days, then they're able to hatch and they're able to affect it. You leave them for 8 days, that's enough time for them to die off, because they'll die off without a human being to host on, and therefore you're good. But Ben Yoyada points out, if to begin with, when you wash them, they didn't have lice in them, then there's no problem to begin with. The lice aren't going to come from nowhere. Therefore, that's why nobody is nizer with this nowadays. Next, another piece of advice. Amar Papa, based at the Isbe Shunra, a house where there's a cat in it, loy neil ba inish b'loy misoni. A person should not go into such a house without wearing shoes. My timer, Meshum to Shunra kotel l'cheva. Cats kill snakes. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that cats are one of the few animals that are immune to the snake's venom. So in fact, the Gemara mentions, for example, even though we have all over Shas the concept of Mayim Megulin, you're not allowed to drink water that was left uncovered because a snake may have drunk from it and injected venom into it. But among other things, you would be a cat can drink from such water because it'll be immune to it. So therefore, cats have that immunity, and they kill snakes. Well, the ochile, and they eat the snake. The isbe b'chivya gar miktini. Now a snake has very tiny bones. The iyosav like garmer de chivya akare. So if a person walks barefoot in such a house and a bone from the snake's skeleton gets into his foot, lo nafik, it's not going to come out so easily. The stacken lay, and then he may be in danger. So therefore, he should be careful to wear shoes in such a place. Ikadamri. Now there's a different version of what Rapapa said. The second version is based at the lesbe shunra. On the contrary, a house where there are no cats. A person should not go into such a house when it's dark. My time, because a snake may wind himself around him, and he won't even realize it, almost stack it, and then he'll be in danger. So if there's a cat there, again, since cats are the natural predators of snakes, then therefore, if there's a cat in the house, you have less reason to be worried about there'll be a snake in the house. But otherwise, there may be. Then the Gemara continues. Now, we actually had this yesterday as well, so I'm not sure why it's repeated over here, unless, again, maybe the printer is messed up and repeated it twice, or who knows. Anyway, Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi gave three instructions to Rebbe, or we said yesterday it might actually be Rav, and Makash Simon, and the Simon for them is those letters. And the first one, Atas Mum ba'atzmacha, don't make a mum in yourself, Ma'ihi, what does that mean? Lo tehevelach dinah b'hadit flosa, don't get into a din torah against three people. Dechad have a bal dinah chotrei sadi, one will pose as the bal din, the other two will pose as the edim. They're not allowed to do that, they're negei b'dava, but the fact is they might do that, and then you have no recourse against them. So don't start up with three people. So we learned yesterday, Ben Yoyada said maybe the mum stands for mekach u'memka or masa u'matan. So yeah. Anyway, the second thing is, v'al tamud al mekach b'shar she'im l'chadamim. Don't look to buy something when you don't have money, because we talked yesterday a few reasons. First of all, because other people are not going to want to buy it because they see that you're interested in it, and therefore they're going to hold back. So if you don't end up buying it because you don't have the money, then the storekeeper is losing out. It also means because other people are going to think it must not be worth buying if you didn't buy it in the end, and various other considerations. And in fact, there can often be a nos dvarim in there as well, b'chlal, to waste the storekeeper's time to tell him I want to buy this when you have no intention of actually buying it. And the third thing is, he tells him, If when your wife is tovel, don't have relations with her the first night. However, this is only talking about when we keep the dinim of nida daraisa, which we don't anymore. Minatora, a woman can tovel on the seventh day from when she started her nidus, even if she had been bleeding earlier that day. So there, but eventually you have the takana. Eventually you have the takanas. The Gemara mentions in other places, and the minog of benosi sirah lachmiru al atzman that we always have shiv and akiyim. So therefore, this isn't an issue nowadays anymore. But the Gemara says hoyu v'chuksek mayin pasuach, because you have a chazaka that the wellspring of blood is still open on that day, because she bled earlier that day. Joma mosh chaziva, she might continue to bleed afterwards after she goes to the mikveh, and then it comes out. In other words, then you have a problem that she was a zava, and she's off limits. But again, nowadays, that there's a minimum of you anyway, have most of the time, you have 5 days even before you can even start counting Shiva Nakiyim, and then you have seven Shiva, and then you have the Shiva Nakiyim themselves. So all of this is not an issue because she's long since stopped bleeding by the time she goes to mikveh. We said before that one of the things that Rebbe told his children is don't start up with, or actually we said that Rav told his son Chia was don't start up with a snake over the goy. So now the Gemara expands on that. Tanan Abanan, Gimel in Meskanin Behem. There were three types of creatures that you should not start up with. Elohim, over to Chavim cotton, the Nachash cotton, the Talmud cotton. A little goy, a little snake, or a little Talmud. My timer, the machusayu bosa udnayu kaima. Their kingship is behind their ear. In other words, it's very likely that they're going to get older and stronger and more powerful, and then they might take revenge. Now, what about the Talmud? Marashal says, one second, bakol adam miskane chutz mibnei v'talmidei. So how would a person's Talmud turn against him? Marashal says, yeah, that means his own Talmud. But here we're talking about a Talmud of somebody else. So therefore, don't start. So somebody else's Talmud, don't try to provoke him, because eventually, not so much other Mephoshim point out. I mean, he's a Talmud Chacham. He's not going to take Mekama per se. But the point is, rather, you yourself are going to be greatly embarrassed. One day, this guy is going to be an Adam Gadol. He's going to be a great Talmud Chacham, and you're going to be very embarrassed that you started up with him and provoked him when he was a nobody. As far as the story with the little goy, actually, the Medrash tells a story in that connection involving the Roman Emperor Diocletianus, Diocletian, he's called in English. The Medrash tells the story. When he was little, he was a swineherd. He took care of pigs. So one day he's grazing his pigs near the yeshiva in wherever the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael was at the time, Tveria, I think. And they didn't want him over there. What are you doing over here with your davar achavs? And they told him to get out of it. Eventually, he went from one thing to another. Eventually, he becomes the Roman emperor, and he decides he's going to take revenge against him. So the Medrash continues the story. See, he went to Pamyas, which is Banyas nowadays, north of the Kinneret. He sent a messenger from there, tells him, I want you to go to Tveria, arrive there, Davgan, Erev Shabbos. I want you to give the message to the Chachamim, to two of the Chachamim over there, Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya and Rabbi Shmuel Ben Achmedi, two of the leading Chachamim over there. They have to present themselves at my palace in Banyas the first thing Motzei Shabbos. Now, he knew, how are they going to be able to do it? They're not going to be able to travel. There's not enough time to travel on Erev Shabbos. They're not going to travel on Shabbos, and therefore now he'll have an excuse to punish them. Bekitzer, the Medrash goes on with the whole story, how a shed over there they went to the bathhouse to bathe with covered Shabbos, and a shed who hangs out at the bathhouse told them, don't worry, the Eibishter will stick up for you. Motzei Shabbos, the shed takes and drops them off in front of the palace. To make a long story short, they got to their audience in time. And Diocletianus says to them, so what do you think? Because Hashem does miracles for you, therefore you can insult the emperor. They say, what are you talking about? He tells them of that story years before. They tell him, you know, with all due respect, we insulted Diclot the swineherd, not Diclotinus the emperor. So he says, you know what, fine, I'll be a nice guy, I'll be merciful you, but always remember this point over here that any little guy, the next thing you know, he may be a big guy and he could get you in a lot of trouble, so don't start up with him unnecessarily. Ben Yehoyada, by the way, makes an interesting point of here. He says, why does the Gemara use the expression that their malchus is behind their ears? Why after their ears rather than any other part of the body? He says, because you think of it, for example, your eyes or your mouth, in order to use them, you have to open them, you have to put in an effort. But your ears are always open. So it symbolizes they can end up becoming great even without much effort. The Eibishter can sort of drop it in their lap that they become great. So therefore, be careful. Okay, the Gemara continues.
In reverse, that's what they're about.
There are such stories also, that the chassid had helped him years before. But you have also the story, for example, with the longest Pesach, with the Noda Behuda helping out a little Goyish boy, and then years later he saved the whole Kehillah from being poisoned. Many such stories. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Amale Rav Ivu Brei. Rav says to his son Ivu, I've worked hard. I've put a lot of effort into teaching you Torah. But it's not working out. We're not having siyata d'shmaya. You're not going to become much of a Talmud Chacham. So let me come and teach you some things of derech eretz, of a behavior in the world that at least when you're going out and making parnosa, then you'll know how to do it in the most effective way. Dizvina that you'll be able to buy and sell effectively. So first of all, he tells him, Ad chola akarech, while the sand is still on your feet, zvinach zobin, what you bought, you should sell. In other words, so you just came back from a business trip. You haven't even washed your feet yet. Your feet are still all dusty and dirty. Go right away and sell what you bought. Don't keep it around for any length of time, and then go buy the next load of merchandise and so forth. In English, you have the expression, don't let the grass grow under your feet. So it's kind of like that. Don't slack off. It includes also, for example, of course, that once a person has accomplished something in Avodah, he shouldn't rest on his laurels. He should right away go and work on the next thing. Then he continues, Kol mili zavin u tacharit, almost anything that you sell, you could afterwards regret it, that you sold it, that later on the price goes up, and you can regret it that you should have sold it at a better price. In fact, the Rashbam uses the expression "yochal atali scharet min hadin." You would actually be allowed al pidin to change your mind. Now you have a concept: once you've sold something, even if the other guy already made the kinyan, then you can't retract it at all. And even if he didn't make the kinyan yet, there's a concept of misha parah for a person who goes back on his word. However, we have this Rashbam over here, and you have other Rishonim that learn that would only be if you try to take it back without a good reason. Here, when the price went up, then you might have a valid reason to be able to retract it without Mishapora being involved. On the other hand, if the price goes up, then you may have a valid reason to retract the sale. Levar bar mechamra, with the exception of wine, dizabin v'lo discharet, sell it and don't look back and don't regret, because if you kept the wine any longer, it might turn to vinegar, and then you'd lose almost your whole investment. Then he continues with another thing. He tells him, "Shodi b'kisach upsach saken." Put the money in your pocket and only then open up your bag. So, in other words, you're selling something. Don't sell on credit. First, make sure the money's in hand before you start opening up the bag and then giving out the tour. Another one. Kaba me'arav like kura me'igra. Better to a calf from the ground and not a kura from the roof. So Rashi explains it means better to go someplace nearby and then do business. You may not make as much of a profit from it rather than going on a faraway trip where you may make much greater profits from it, but the risks are much greater. So metaphorically, in other words, you go up to the roof. There's a danger of a person going up to the roof. You might fall off. So the same way, don't take any more risks, even where it means that you might you stand to make to make more profit from it. The risk of traveling, the risk that he might be that he might that something might happen on the way, he might be attacked by bandits, he might, who knows what. You have, by the way, as one of many examples of it, you have, for example, the Rambam's brother, famously, the Rambam had a younger brother of David, the Rambam invested a lot of money with him, and then this Reb David used to go on far sea voyages. This is after they lived in Mitzrayim already. This Reb David would go on sea voyages all the way to India to do business, and then that way he'd earn money for his own family and for the Rambam, and to support his brother, the Rambam, as well, while he's sitting and learning Torah. Eventually, though, what happened was there was a storm, and then David's boat sank. So he drowned, and all his money was gone, and all of the Rambam's money was gone. The Rambam describes in a letter years later, he says, it's 8 years later, and I still can't get over it. And then the result of that was that Rambam had to go work for Parnassa. That's when he started working as the Sultan's doctor. But no, the body was never found, Pashtos. But yeah, so that's just one of many examples of the story. The Rebbe's brother also. The Rebbe's brother also passed away. That's true. I mean, the Rebbe's brothers didn't support him, but yeah, it's true. Yeah, I hear. Okay. Anyway, Maharsho explains this kaba me'arav le'kura me'igra differently. The Gemara elsewhere mentions in Yevamos that it's better to buy land as soon as possible rather than investing in metalplin, better to invest in land. So therefore, Rav is telling his son, Aivu, better to invest in land, even though you might get only a kav from it, rather than other things, which are like the roof, which are like floating in the air, even though you might get a much greater return from it. And again, there are different other explanations of it. Another one he tells him, Tamri b'chaluzach, and when you have dates in your bag, Labes Sudna Rohut, run right away to the Sudna, to the brewer where they make beer. In other words, Rashi explains, if you keep them around, you may end up eating them and then you lose your investment. So like this, as soon as you have them, right away, make sure to go and get them and get what needs to be done with them made. In this case, the beer in those times was generally made out of dates. So ad kama, how much should you have where it's worth it to run to the brewer? Amara papa ad tlos sovi. When you have up to three saw, in other words, even if you only have three saw, it's not very much. Nevertheless, that's already worth it to go and have them make beer out of it. To Amar a Papa, and in fact, a Papa himself says he loved it on Moi Shifra. If I didn't brew beer, loy I atri, I never would have become rich. He became rich. That was his parnasa. He made beer, and from that he became rich. Earlier in the Masechta, Rav Papa also said that he married a Bas Koyen, and because of that he became rich. So it's a hova ho gan. He married a Bas Koyen, and then the Ebishter gave him the idea to become a brewer, and he became rich from that. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says, now there were lots of brewers, but he knew some kind of special recipe. Usually beer is not so good for a person's health. Rav Papa had a special recipe to make it where it was very healthful too. And therefore, that's when the Gemara says in a second, Soid Noah, he says that's what it means. There's a secret involved if you know the right recipe. Others say it was Rav Chista who said that if I hadn't brewed beer, I wouldn't become rich. So my sudna, the Gemara says, why do we call a brewer in Aramaic sudna? Because it stands for Amar Rav Chista soid nor ugmilas chasadim. There's a nice secret involved because you can get rich from it, like Rav Chista and Rav Papa did, and you can do gmilas chasadim. You'll earn a lot of money, and you'll have a lot of money to be able to do gmilas chasadim. And so that's what Maharsho says. Everybody knows, usually, not everybody knows how to brew beer from them. Most people think dates are for eating. It doesn't occur to the average person that you can make beer from them. So therefore, if you realize that secret, then you can become rich from it and have lots of money for Gmilas Chasadim. And then Ben Yehoyada adds the point that also it's not just to know Stam how to brew beer, but to know the Papa's secret recipe. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. Chofzayin Tishrei. I have the right date, right? Yeah. Okay. There's a famous question. You have a neshama came down in a Gilgul many times. Which body is it going to come in Tchias HaMesim? Well, let's consider, the Rebbe says. A neshama, why does it come into a Gilgul? Is to fix up whatever it didn't first time around. Now, every year there's Malaya Mitzvah Skariman. So that means in every Gilgul that it went through, various aspects of the neshama were nitaken. So by Tchias HaMesim, each guf will have the part of the neshama that it was masakin during its lifetime. So then you're going to wonder in that case, then you're going to have a goof that doesn't have a complete nefesh. You should know that every bechina includes all the other ones. So there's, in other words, in effect, the Rebbe is saying there's no such thing as an incomplete nefesh. Every one includes an entire, every part of the neshama includes a koyma shlem. Continuing with halachas of before Shabbos. A person has to make sure to have nice clothes and a nice talis l'kavod Shabbos. It says v'chibad toy, and the Gemara explains that it means your Shabbos clothing should not be like your weekday clothing. Even if a person is on the road among goyim, you should still wear big day Shabbos, because after all, it's not you'd think. So what? There's nobody to impress over here. You're not doing it to impress the people. You're doing it l'kavod Shabbos. Famously, it's broad. Even when the Alter Rebbe was in jail, he had no big day Shabbos to change into it. He had a handkerchief. Every week he would tear off a strip from it and make new garters for his socks. So that way, it was makayim to have new clothes, to have fresh clothes for Shabbos.